face was the very last thing that you were aware of before coming in. It is the being who supports you through the birth process, whether that's difficult or hard for you as a new being coming into the planet in a body or whatever. And I really think it's due to the guardian angels that we come at all sometimes. My mom has told me that when she was 7 months pregnant with me, she went into labor, and I know I was very anxious to get here. I have clear knowledge of that at a very deep level. It's not an intellectual knowing, it's on a feeling, cellular level. And I was very anxious to come, and yet when it was time for me to come at 9 months, then I wouldn't come out. So obviously I learned a little bit more something about what it was like to be in the body, and I ended up being a breech birth, apparently. So I found that out rather recently. I thought that was very interesting, because there's a lot of memories that I have around birth and stuff, so kind of interesting to get that cleared up. I have a few notes that I want to just share a little bit with you. First of all, it's not a new belief. It's a very, very ancient belief. The people who probably worked with this the most were the Romans in distant times. And they actually had an altar in their homes where they had offerings of food and little gifts and all kinds of things, images, candlelight or oil lamps, whatever, to the one that they believed guided and protected each of them. And eventually this evolved into one of their gods known as Vesta. I think she was the female goddess of the hearth, goddess of the home. The Romans were conquered repeatedly a lot of times before they really came into power, and kind of had to hide that, the hearth thing, for a while. But eventually that whole thing evolved into the goddess of Vesta. So the Greeks also believed in something very similar, but they called it a daemon, not demon, but D-A-E. Daemon, and that was one who inspired or brought insight or wisdom, sometimes even genius, to people, they believed. And everyone who was conscious, they thought, had one of these beings to work with them. In today's world, of course, and a lot of the religions, there's kind of an overt or kind of a hidden teaching about it. In the Catholic Church in particular, it is a teaching that's really present. And it's interesting, I've heard some priests speak lately, and some of them really don't like all this angel stuff that's out there and very present, and others of them are very comfortable with it. But the whole teaching and belief about angels was very present in the scriptures until at one of the, I think it was a synod at Nicaea, 3-something A.D., they decided that, the council decided that people were really making idols out of angels, and there's too much angel worship, and et cetera, et cetera. And they just excised whole tracts from all the sacred texts, leaving only very scanty references to Michael, Raphael, I think Uriel, and Uriel, and I've forgotten who the other one was. There are four, but Michael and Raphael are the two that have more than one thing said about them in the Bible. They're mentioned more than once. And so very interesting that happened. The Vatican does have all of that information in their great library, which I believe is going to open publicly sometime in our future, hopefully in our lifetimes. But that'll be a while yet. But they do have a lot of information that was taken and is retained in the library. It's not available to very many people that are even there and can be in the library. And what's interesting is they took all of this out, and then a number of years later, in 400 and something, they put a certain amount back in, especially the guardian angel teaching. So I don't know what happened to cause them to do that, but that's where the whole teaching as we know it today about guardian angels really stems from that time. So you can think of the guardian angel as your celestial mother, and guardian angels are feminine in polarity. However, many people see their angels as masculine, which is perfectly normal. If you actually see your angel or dream about it or hear a voice or if you're doing a guided deepening and the angel appears as masculine, that's perfectly normal, because they will take whatever form they can take to get your attention so that you will recognize that that's who it is. In some classes I've had people with kind of a gnome-looking being or an old being instead of a young, beautiful being. They're all different forms. It's what's appropriate for the person. And that's what the angel will bring forward for you. generally when you hear stories of people having actually had contact with their guardian angel, the angel appears as incredibly beautiful and extremely vital and youthful, like maybe the earlier middle 20s. It's a good age limit, you might say. One of the things that the guardian angel does that you've heard people talk about is giving warnings, protecting, and all of that. There are lots and lots of stories about children in particular and their guardian angel. And one that I want to share with you, I think I shared this in the class I taught this summer, happened to a lady in the office that I'm working in part-time. Her name is Veronica, and she's got a little boy that's 5 now. But when Patrick was 3, he was bouncing on his mother's king-size bed in her bedroom and just, you know, flying up and having a great time. And she was in the bathroom running in and out and not giving it a lot of thought. But one time when she came through, she saw that he was really getting up there and in danger. I think she had a ceiling fan over her bed or something, but in danger anyway of really getting up so high that he was going to hit his head. And her other worry, the major part of her worry, was you could say the bed was there, and on this whole wall she's got closet space that is mirrored. And she was afraid that he was going to lose his balance maybe and fly into the mirrors. And I think that's exactly what was about to happen. He got up really high, and she had said to him, you know, slow down now, don't jump so high, it's time to get off the bed, or something like that. But he took this great leap, and she saw that as he went up, his body was angled incorrectly and it was going to go right for the glass, and specifically that his head was going to hit those glass doors. And she stopped in front of the bed, and I think she was kind of crying out to him and reaching, and what she saw her son do, her teenage daughter was with her, by the way, and witnessed this as well. What she saw actually happen was that Patrick flew up, but he kind of, and at this angle, heading for the glass, stopped in midair, and they saw his body being righted, and he floated to the ground and was very gently sat, I think, either on her carpet or the edge of her bed. And her daughter was panic-stricken and ran out of the room. And Veronica flew to her son, who was real excited, and he had this real joyful look on his face. And he said, Mommy, did you see that angel? She caught me. She saved me from the glass. You know, she just caught me and sat me right down. And he could describe in detail what the angel looked like, that it had wonderful wings. He described beautiful, big, big wings. It had a beautiful crown, he said, with starry lights and pearls on it, I think. And the really cute part, I thought, was that he said she had the most beautiful feet. He could see her feet peeping out from under her gown or whatever she had on. And one of the reasons Veronica shared this story with me is that her family, when she tried to tell them, totally disbelieved her, made fun of her. So she stopped sharing the story after a while and kind of hushed Patrick up, too. And when she shared it with me and I validated that it was real, she just kind of started to cry and said that no one had believed her. And I asked how old Patrick is, and today he is 5, so it's happened at least 2 years ago, and told her that the memory might surface again where he will talk about it, and what she might have him do is make a drawing of what he saw. And lo and behold, about 2 weeks later, that actually happened, and then she was able to talk with him about it a little bit and validate it as being real. And he was beginning to disbelieve it himself, that it hadn't really happened, that he dreamed it, but here he had his mother to validate. That's just one example. There are so many stories about children being rescued. One of my favorites is of a little girl who got out of the garden gate while her mother was in the kitchen cooking, and she also was a toddler. And there were train tracks that ran near their home, and this child had walked over to the tracks. The mother looked out her kitchen window and could not see her daughter anywhere, and just knew instinctively that she was out of the yard, flew out of the house in the yard, to see her daughter as the train roared by, standing right beside the tracks. But right beside her daughter was a man dressed all in a white suit with his arm very protectively around her, kind of keeping her upright with the wind and the train roaring by and everything. And when she went over to see how the daughter was and everything, the person disappeared. And her little girl wasn't really old enough to say much other than, you know, there was this nice man that kind of kept me. And so lots of stories like that, and lots of stories of, there are a lot of stories around pregnant women who take a fall or lose their balance or get lost or something and somehow being guided back or being uprighted or something like that. There are also a lot of stories where there are people on the verge of attack or something really strong about to happen to them. They're not always saved specifically from the attack, but they recognize that the angel presence is there, and somehow that helps them get through the experience. And I have a girlfriend that this happened to. She was physically attacked, and because the angel, for some reason, apparently she needed to go through that process. Very hard for me to accept or understand that, even as I think of myself as being an evolving spiritual person. But she said what happened in the experience was she saw the presence of her angel, and it was the angel's energy which gave her the courage to speak to this man who was attacking her without fear, but being very focused and grounded, really. And every time she was able to let that kind of voice come through her, the person pulled back, you know, stopped attacking her. And that is eventually how she saved her own life and got herself out of the experience. But people would say things like, well, why didn't the angel save or protect her? It doesn't do any good to ask why. There's no, it's our intellect that asks those questions, and sometimes we just have to let go of that. But she did go through a time of counseling and therapy and eventually was able to put the experience into kind of a growth perspective for her. That's a very unusual one that I know of personally. So all kinds of stories about how they interact with us. One of the things that the angel does in particular is it does commune with your soul. It's like the bridge between this human body or this personality self and the vastness of your soul. And it helps the personality remember what your goals are, what your dreams are, what the work is that you've come in to do, or how it is that you've chosen to relate or be in service or be on the planet. So it reminds us all the time of those things. And it's really utterly devoted to your spiritual development, to remembering that you are a spiritual being while you're on the planet. So for myself, I've had lots of times where I'm looking for what I think is what I'm looking for in the bookstore, and another book will either fall off the shelf or the title really catches my eye, but I didn't think I was interested, and I open it and see it's what I'm supposed to read. All kinds of things like that. The other thing, of course, that the guardian angel does as you continue to grow and evolve is that it will guide you to teachers or people who have information that you need, or it will bring information in the dream state. Teachers may come to you in the dream state or whatever as you're ready to receive the next level of information. There's all kinds of ways that you can know when they're around, but I think the most common one that I've experienced and that I've heard about is that they emanate a particular fragrance. It's floral. It's kind of like narcissus or lilies, or I've heard some people, one friend that recently told me she was having a fragrance every time she meditated and thought it might be her guardian angel, described it as being citrus, like orange blossoms, but kind of a real sweet, pungent fragrance. What else do I have here? Oh, I've got a note to share with you, another thing that happened to me. When we lived on the Central Coast, this is another story about how you can be really attuned in attunement with your angel and not even listen sometimes, and that they really do still try to assist. I was on the way to San Luis one morning, and the night before I'd had a vision, literally a vision as I was driving home, in which I saw myself driving my car and the gas pedal was stuck to the floor. And I just flew apart. I just panicked. I didn't know what to do or how to save myself. Well, I kind of denied that vision. But when I did get home that night, I asked my husband, what do you do if your gas pedal gets stuck to the floor? What in the world would you do? And he said, well, you don't turn the key off. It'll blow the engine and, I don't know, lots of different things like that. But one of the things you can do is pump the brakes until you can get to a place where you can really lay on the brakes for all the whatever's left of them, and then turn the engine off when the engine has gotten down to a slower rate of speed. Well, the very next morning I was driving back into San Luis. I get on Highway 101 and I'm heading out, and the next thing I know is my accelerator is picking up speed. And I was looking at the speedometer just going. It's slightly raining. There aren't any cars in front of me, but there are cars behind me, and there was a couple to the side of me, and I'm in the slow lane. And I start to remember that vision that I had the day before, and I really get panicky. And I put my foot on the gas pedal, nothing happens. It's just going flat to the floor. It's so weird how you respond. I try to get my foot under there. I'm thinking, oh, I could write a sign and hold it up and help, my gas pedal's stuck. All these stupid things that your intellect does. In the meantime, what I was hearing within myself was my angel's quiet voice saying, We tried to let you know this was going to happen. We gave you information yesterday, and you didn't have anybody check, so now you're in the midst of it, and we'll try and help. So I thought, oh, great, you know, what do I do? And I was at that point going, well, help, I really need help now. I really don't know what to do. It's raining. And they said, or my angel said, don't go up onto the embankment or anything. Keep driving until there is an up ramp, and then we will have help for you at the end of that up ramp. So I remembered Santa Barbara exit as being one that curves up and over to the right. So when it came, I did what Bert told me to do. I just pumped on the brakes until I got to the end of the exit, and then I hit them for all that I was worth and got the car slowed enough that I could turn the engine off. Well, there was a man in a car right across from where I had stopped. There's the off-ramp and then a road, and then there's an on-ramp to get back onto the freeway. He was sitting right at the head of that on-ramp, and I heard my angel say, there is your help. He has a telephone and can call your husband. And I was shaking physically, and I was crying and everything. I went, there's no way I'm going to that strange person. I don't know who that person is. I was just really ingrained about that wasn't the help I needed. And I said, you know, my friends Roger and Carol live right down here, a quarter of a mile. I'm walking to their house. And the sweet little voice said, they're not home. You need to go to the man who has the phone. He's right here. But, of course, I didn't listen. I walked to Carol's house and angrily discovered she wasn't home. So then, of course, the voice again said, go back to the up ramp, the on ramp, and you help us there. And instead I went to Carol's neighbor, flogged through mud, ruined a new pair of shoes in the rain, and the neighbor wasn't home either. So I finally surrendered and walked all the way back to the on-ramp, walked over to that man's car, and he had a cellular phone, and he called Bert, and, you know, he came and rescued me, came and fixed, there was something that had gotten disconnected or hooked onto something else. So that's a really good example of how you can get all the information you need for yourself, to save yourself or whatever, but if you don't listen, it doesn't do you any good. So. And the whole business of free will, as much information as I was getting, you know, the guardian angel didn't do anything about fixing the stuck gas pedal or taking me out of the situation or anything like that. So it's it can be real interesting sometimes, and it takes practice so that you get aware of what information is accurate that you're being given. And that's a good one where I didn't listen at all. And I've got a note here, they truly are patient and understanding, and that is so true. I never, ever feel judged or like they're a harsh critic or anything like that. Okay. Oh, one other thing I've got a little note about John Lilly, one of my favorite people. He's a dolphin researcher, and I think he's also a neurophysiologist or something like that. He had contact with his guardian angels from the time he was a little boy, and one of the things he says was how, I guess he grew up somewhere where it was very hot, like this valley, but he remembers experiences of their great wings fanning to keep him cool. He had three. He remembers three angels being with him as a child, and his friends would be dying, and they'd be sweating. He always was so cool. He never sweated or anything because of the fanning of their great wings. And one of the things that happened to him as a child was, they told him that they would reveal to him in church, I think he also was Catholic, some Sunday at Mass, they would show him a picture of all the angels and what heaven looked like and some of the saints, but that when they showed that to him, he should keep it within his heart and not really tell it to anyone because no one would believe him. Well, that did happen, and he was so overwhelmed and amazed. It was just in awe. He was just in awe about what he saw. But he immediately went back to school on Monday, a Catholic school, and told the nun who ran his class, who was his teacher, what he saw. And she immediately denied his experience and told him that he had made it up or he was lying, that only the saints could have these kinds of experiences, not just a little, you know, American boy. It was impossible. And he was just crushed and heartbroken. And what he was told about that experience was that there would come a time when people would listen to him and hear him, and they would again tell him when he could tell it, when he could write about it. And it is written. He has written about it in his books, and I think he's still in contact with those angels. But I just love that because it's kind of an unusual contact, but one that he has used later in his life as a springboard for his spiritual writing. So, and it's nice to have a man that has maintained that contact from childhood all the way into his adulthood. It's really nice. If you want to read angel stories, there are lots of books out now with stories in them like that. So you just have to go to any bookstore and, gosh, even Charlie Shedd, I think he's a Protestant minister, he has recently written one with a collection of that he's heard about from people. So lots of them to hear and read about. Okay. You've all got paper and you all have a pen. I guess what I want to say before we go into these other deepenings is that your angel wants you to know about it, wants you to know that it is real, that this is a real being who can support or encourage or help you through a dark time, whatever. And that's one of the reasons for making the contact. When we express our gratitude or when they bring us a gift of some kind, whether it be insight or just that you notice a flower blooming or birdsong or something, it's a wonderful gift to give back to them to express your gratitude. And it assists them, I believe, in their own growth. I don't know a lot about the evolution of the angels. There's a whole series of choirs from the seraphim all the way down to the guardian angels and the nature spirits and everything. But there is some kind of evolution that is occurring within them. And it is said that the guardian angel is one of those who does evolve. Supposedly, they are very highly evolved air sylphs. Sylph is a very ethereal kind of being, and they are members of the kingdom of the air. And they say that guardian angels have evolved from those beings. So when you are working in cooperation with them, you can assist them in their evolvement as well. So it is said. I don't know that for a fact, but that's what I've discovered in my research. The other thing, of course, is that the angel wants you to know its depth of affection and regard for you and its constancy. It just is always there. Even during the years when, in my middle to late 20s, when I wanted to be normal and shut out, really tried to shut out a lot of the information that was still coming through, that voice or that sense of presence was always with me. So even though I left, they never did. And it was years. It was a great reunion then, years later. Well, let's see. Let's get ready to do this life review. You know, I don't know why, but I think I want to put this one in. After I get it in, I probably will decide I don't like it. But let's try that. It has to be the right side. I don't know if I've got that on the right side either. So just stick it in whichever way is fully rewound, and I'll listen to it for a minute, and then I'll know. That's not it. I have to fast forward it. Yeah, the other side, yeah, if it'll do that. Feels like he's holding the energy for this class. I'm glad he likes the box lid. I'm really glad I left it out here for him. See what, you know, what you can do with that to stay open instead of to shut it down. It's sometimes difficult to discern between third dimensional reality and spiritual reality, and that sounds like what you're talking about a little bit. So it can be difficult. Okay, well, I don't know what that is. That's not the right music, though. Put the Angel Love tape back on, I think. Okay, we're going to do a life review now. How many lives have you had?